Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141 and 98.3 FM, the Quiet Storm Channel. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Your voting rights are changing depending on where you live. It's part of the continuing 2020 voting backlash by Republican-led state legislatures unhappy with the outcome of last year's election. Georgia has been getting the headlines, but dozens of other states are following suit, limiting mail-in ballots, poll hours, and more. Well, this is often impacting voters of color and the poor. So what can be done about this? Well, joining me to talk about this is Nse Ufot, CEO of the Georgia Project Action Fund. Lines are open. If you have a thought about this, if you have a question about this, if you are concerned about your voting rights, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. And say thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Thank you for having me. Good evening.
So let's get right to the point. As I said, Georgia is getting the headlines for all
right.
of this.
Talk
to me about that so that we can kind of set the stage right now. President Biden called what happened in Georgia several weeks ago a new Jim Crow. Explain what that means.
I think that, okay, so a couple things, right?
Yeah.
One, that while Georgia's getting a lot of the headlines, that these anti-voting bills are the number one priority of the National Republican Party, like the Heritage Foundation and the American Legislative Exchange. It is the number one unifying principle on the right now. And so Georgia isn't the only state that these anti-voting bills, like almost down to like the same, similar, identical language, have been introduced in 47 out of our 50 states. Right. The law just passed in Arkansas last week. It's on the table in Michigan. It's on the table in Texas. I think that Georgia came out early because, A, we launched this corporate accountability campaign immediately. I think, B, because the entire nation's eyes were on Georgia after Black people and rural voters and young people delivered a historic win to deliver two Democratic U.S. senators, Georgia's first Black senator and Georgia's first Jewish senator to the United States Senate with the election of Warnock and Ossoff. I think that we don't suffer in silence, right? And also we have a part-time legislature. So the Georgia legislative session ended at the end of March. And so we didn't have time. We weren't playing any games. Right. In most states, like people have an entire year to debate, to deliberate, but they were moving swiftly. They were moving quickly. They were moving in secret. And so we wanted to expose all of that. Oh, and by the way, they put hands and feet on a Black woman, a sitting legislator who went to knock on the door of the governor so that as a legislator, she could witness the governor signed SB 202 into law, and they assaulted her and drummed up multiple felonies to charge her with. So I think just the level of chicanery and the level of shenanigans that were involved with the passage had a lot to do with the fact that Georgia was first out of the gate, and because our legislative session ends earlier than most folks in other states. But there's nothing redeemable about this bill, nothing at all. There's not a single thing that can be considered to the benefit of Georgia voters or American voters, and I want to be clear about that.
And I want to talk more about that because you are absolutely correct that this was not just a Georgia thing. Yes, Georgia was the state where all eyes were focused because, as you said, the outcome of the presidential election in Georgia, as well as the two U.S. Senate seats. But as you said, you know, Arkansas has passed bills. We have seen the same thing in Iowa. We have seen it in Utah. And the map of states that have passed or are trying to pass more restrictive bills looks like the Electoral College voting map, in that in that you are, you know, the Republican states, the states that, for example, voted for President Trump in the last election are the states that have these restrictive bills, and then those that have more progressive bills that are opening up voting options are the states that in many cases voted for President Biden. I mean, it looks like it looks like election night on the U.S. map, but not all. But it's not the case for all of them. For example, California has both. There are some more restrictive bills and some more open bills, for lack of a better term. But let's talk about some of the issues that some states, and again, we can use Georgia, because as you said, Georgia appears to be the blueprint for a lot of these more restrictive laws. Talk to me about some of the things that we've seen, such as reduction in polling hours and polling places.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much trash in this bill, but I think that the thing that I find particularly galling are, for example, the fact that this bill has created 5 new crimes for voting. Not since the Voting Rights Act of 1965 was passed have we had a need for criminal defense lawyers who had some expertise with our voting laws, right? And now we're seeing that, I think the one that's been widely reported and discussed is our desire, or the criminalization of giving water to voters while they stand in line to vote. And I heard about some Fox News anchors, like, derisively saying, I bring my own water to the polling location. And I imagine that they don't live in communities where they've had to wait 9, 10, 11 hours in order to stand in line to vote. So miss me with your sanctimonious bootleg clapbacks. I will say that, now that there has been an increased adoption in vote by mail, that it is now a felony, or that they've created 2 new felonies. So one is to provide support to anyone filling out their ballot that is not your child. The other one is if you take a selfie with your absentee ballot, that's also now a crime in Georgia, which I don't think that Gen Z and the younger people, like the people who will be voting for the first time in this election, were born in 2003. And so given like the nature of social media and how they live, I suspect that we are going to have to deal with this, and we're going to have to find a lot of criminal defense lawyers for a lot of voters who, took a selfie with their ballots.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about laws that have either passed or are in the pipeline in dozens of states across the country that will mean, if they pass, more restrictive voting laws in the coming state and indeed national elections. If you have questions, if you have comments about this, give me a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So let's back up a couple of years, a few years, because one of the things that also seems to be particularly consistent, 2 laws that we have seen quite a bit of, the first one that we've been talking about literally for a couple of, probably almost 2 decades, is voter IDs. It continues to be hotly debated. And the other one is the purging of voter rolls. And we saw that happen during the Georgia gubernatorial election. So, but let's talk about the voter ID, because for someone such as myself, I've lived in seven states since, six states and the District of Columbia, since graduating from college. I have always had a driver's license. I consider that and my family and everyone else and my peers, all of us have driver's licenses. My daughter is trying to get her driver's license now, but she's always had an age of majority card. She has been voting since 17 in the state of Maryland. What's wrong with voter ID?
A couple of things.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you know, in many places across the Deep South, it was not a requirement to have a birth certificate. That there were the particularly in poor, rural, and Black and Brown communities, and Black communities in particular. So we have paid for attorneys to find a pastor. Who was the pastor of some little country church who can swear the affidavit that this is how that a person's birth was recorded in the family Bible. That they didn't actually have a birth certificate, that all they had, the record of their birth was contained in the family Bible. But that is an issue that many people have to deal with, and that we are responsible for, A. Also, B, when our now governor was Secretary of State, he was responsible for overseeing one of the largest breaches in voter data leaks in Georgia history. And so having people put their whole Social Security number on a voter registration form provides a lot of challenges and exposes people to identity theft. And it's not necessary in order to verify somebody's identity. I would also add that, like, with people who are returning citizens and coming home, often have a difficult time getting ID, because you need ID to get your Social Security card. You need your ID to get your birth certificate. You need ID to get ID. And so if you find yourself in the throes of our criminal legal system, or just not having it, we are arguing that that's a poll tax, that people have to spend money in order for the privilege. And the challenge is not that they are requiring ID, is that they are limiting the ID. There used to be a whole number of things that you could use to establish your identity and to establish your address for the purposes of voting. It's not that they required ID, it's that they limited it. So now, like, you can't use utility bills. You can't use, you know, an IRS tax bill, that you can only use state ID. And they continue to try to restrict it and narrow it. That not only have our indigenous brothers and sisters suffered the indignity of the country, the government trying to exterminate them, trying to wipe them out. Now, we had to fight a major fight in the Georgia State Legislature to keep tribal IDs as sufficient for voting on the list of IDs that people could use to vote in a place like Georgia. So for me, it's not about, and it's so obvious to a lot of us that it's not about, you know, the safety and security and people establishing their identity, because if it was, they would adopt a more expansive list, go back to the old list of all of the ways that you can establish your ID, and they wouldn't be going after tribal IDs and trying to invalidate them for the purposes of voting. Oh, and by the way...
Hold that by the way, because I've got to take a break. Don't forget your thought. No, that's okay. It's the bottom of the hour, and I've got to take a break. But hold that point also. If you want to get in on this conversation, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Inside segment via podcast on WHUR.com or download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM, the Quiet Storm channel. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This discussion continues in a few seconds. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM, channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and on the Quiet Storm channel, 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about more restrictive voting laws proposed across the country. My guest is Ense Ufot, CEO of the Georgia Project Action Fund. Let's go back to that point that you were going to make before, Ense, because this really, you were talking about, you know, indigenous peoples' IDs, for example, and other ways to identify yourself as a legal voter at the polls.
And the last point that I was going to make was that there are disproportionate ways that students at the Atlanta University Center, so Selma students, their student IDs are not sufficient for them to vote in Georgia elections. But if you have a student ID and you attend Georgia State, for example, your student ID is sufficient. And so, you know, I mean, Atlanta is a metropolitan area. Our universities attract students from neighboring states. And so a student at Morehouse is just as likely to be from Maryland or Virginia as a student at Georgia State. And yet not their student IDs are provided, are treated differently for purposes of voting. So, I mean, I think that, again, this is an attempt to poke at a particular population. And I understand, like, lots of people will say, well, don't you need an ID for everything? You need an ID in order to open up a bank account. Well, there are lots of people in our country, there's millions of people in our country who are unbanked, right? And so I just don't get why we are so comfortable with limiting access. I'm not prepared to cede any ground. We're not giving up anything that people have fought for and won, particularly as it relates to the right to vote and the right to have a say in our democracy. So this is a hill that we will die on. Absolutely.
Let's talk about the purging of voter rolls. This isn't just a Georgia thing, although it has happened in Georgia. We've seen some other states do that. That's one of the things that I've always found rather perplexing. Why purge the rolls? Why some people may decide, okay, they don't want to vote this year, but may want to vote the next year, or maybe they do want to vote for the year before, last year, this year, but maybe next year they don't feel like it. What difference does it make?
I mean, I think that it's very obvious to many of us that purging the voter rolls creates additional hurdles for people who decide that they want to show up and participate in an election. It comes from the same place that for people who oppose same-day voter registration, that they think that there is some feat of strength, some sort of test of your patriotism that people have to, like, some hurdle that needs to be cleared in order to demonstrate your worthiness for participating in our elections. And so the idea that if you are not a regular voter, if you're not a frequent voter, which is young people, which is people of color, which is poor folks, then you get purged and you have to start all over again by registering to vote and then making sure that you get on the rolls, making sure that you actually are added to the voter rolls, and making sure that information is all in place before you go. And it's power, right? They have the power to kick people off the voter rolls. They want to make it more difficult for people to participate in our elections, right? That as we are living through and witnessing the browning of America, that we are rapidly headed towards a multiracial,
multi-ethnic, multilingual majority where there is not any particular race that will be in the majority, that it will be a plurality, that people are figuring out, like, wow, okay, so it's not cool to be publicly racist. It's not cool to be publicly sexist anymore. We have to contend with this new normal, this new America. And the new America is where 71% of white voters in Georgia voted for Trump, and he still lost, right? The new America means that we only need 29% of white voters and then a plurality of black, Latino, and Asian American voters in order to get someone elected who is accountable to the people and will do the people's work. And so what do you do when you, like, when folks don't need you, when you don't control politics, when you don't have an outsized influence on all of our policymaking, and when you don't have an outsized grip on our political apparatus? There are some people who are embracing it and who are welcoming it and who are figuring out how we run campaigns and elections and how we govern in the America of our future, which is here, right? And there are some people who are fighting it with everything that they have, including introducing these trash laws in 47 states that make it more difficult for people to vote, including purging the voter rolls like they do in our home state. The last time the rolls were purged, they kicked 750,000 people off of the voter rolls overnight. And so they are using it to fight the future.
Talk to me about the argument, and I've also found this particularly fascinating, and we've seen this happen in Texas, particularly in the Houston area, where drive-up mail-in voting is now against the law. I've never really understood that, particularly since we are in the pandemic, and then, you know, by extension, mail-in voting restrictions we've seen major mail-in voting restrictions across the country, again, starting with Georgia and sweeping through these dozens of states. And in Maryland, in the District of Columbia, in Virginia, and in other areas, we have seen a great deal of success with mail-in voting. Yeah, it had some bumps getting started, but everything had bumps. Working had bumps. Educating your children in the midst of the pandemic had bumps. Going to the grocery store had bumps. Everything had some bumps and some bruises and potholes and sinkholes. But the argument against mail-in voting, and particularly, as I said, in Texas about drive-up mail-in voting, is just, I'm not sure I understand that.
Well, and I will tell you, it's particularly offensive to us here in Georgia, because while most states expanded, you know, vote by mail because of the pandemic, right? We were in the middle of a global health pandemic, and people were dying left and right, particularly folks from our community, that many states, most states, expanded vote by mail in response to the pandemic. Georgia voters have had no fault absentee balloting or no fault vote by mail for 16 years.
Now, what does that mean? What does that mean, no fault?
Meaning that you don't. So in most states that even had mail-in voting, it was that you had to demonstrate that you were going to be hospitalized or that you were going to be traveling, you're in the military, and that is when they would give you a mail-in ballot, that you had to give a reason, a reason why you would not be in the jurisdiction and a reason why you could not vote in person during early voting or on election day. And so that's the law of the land, and that was the law of the land in most states. And so because of the pandemic, many states took it upon themselves to not only open up vote by mail to everyone, but to also mail vote by mail applications to people so that they could request a ballot and vote that way. And that is why it's so offensive, because in Georgia, for 16 years, you have never had to make an excuse. If you were over 65, if you requested it once, they would send you a ballot every single election, that you didn't have to ask for it. You requested it once, and you continue to get a ballot for every election that you were eligible to vote in. But if you were under the age of 65, again, you didn't need to give a reason, that you just said, hey, send me a ballot for the next election, and you would get it from your county board of elections. Hmm. That is why the changes and the reduction in the ability to use vote by mail is so offensive to us here in Georgia. Because, again, Georgians have been voting the pandemic way, if you will, for 16 years.
Yeah. Speaking about Georgia, one of the things that we have seen come out is big business. The Fortune 500 companies, Home Depot, Coca-Cola, Delta, Aflac, and others like UPS, who have come out and have, made statements that they do not approve of the new voting laws in Georgia. They, they say that, among other things, that they are restrictive, just as we have been talking about. But even smaller companies have spoken up, and some high-profile individuals, Will Smith pulling the production of a movie out of Georgia. But let's talk not only about, the politics of money, but the reality is that are all of these businesses, are they a day late and a dollar short on this?
I mean, it's never too late to do the right thing, right? So we welcome people, CEOs to, ordinary individual average citizens to speak up in defense of our democracy, and that, saying what you see is not right, and not allowing ourselves to be gaslit.
But
I don't think it's ever too late to do the right thing.
And certainly we know the All-Star Game has been taken out of Atlanta and is going to be played in Denver, the baseball All-Star Game.
So, Colorado, which has extraordinary voter protection laws, by the way, some of the best in our country. But go ahead.
There you have it. But is this also problematic for the same people that these laws are also hurting? People of color, the poor, hourly workers. I would imagine that there are going to be a lot of people who are hurt by the All-Star Game pulling out. I'm not talking about the big vendors, but I'm talking about the soda sellers, the popcorn, the concession folks, the folks that have the food trucks around the stadium, and there's always the risk that some of these other big companies, if they continue to give these laws pushback, that on the horizon there may be some other things that hurt working class folks.
Okay, so a couple of things. One, we are working class folks, right? So that's who we register to vote. Those are our members. Those are the people that we are accountable to and in deep community with. We are those working folks. And so what I'm here to tell you is that the minimum wage in Georgia is $5.15 an hour. And every year when the legislative session opens and closes, we do everything that we can to get a hearing from Democrats and Republicans to say, we need an increase in the minimum wage, because not only can you not take care of a family on $5.15 an hour, you can't take care of yourself on a minimum wage that's below the federal minimum wage. The same people who are pushing these anti-voting bills are the same people who have denied us a proper hearing and a proper vote on raising the minimum wage in Georgia. And so miss me with the won't this hurt working people, because these are the same people who have left billions of dollars on the table, that Georgia still has an expanded Medicaid, that we have 12 hospitals in rural Georgia that are about to close or that have already closed.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM, The Quiet Storm Channel. Got a bit of a technical issue, but we do want to thank our guest, Insay Ufot, for talking to us about this very critical issue. Of course, Insay Ufot, CEO of the Georgia Project Action Fun. We will stay on this issue. We're also going to remind you that tomorrow we're going to take a deep dive into the Derek Chauvin trial, and we will keep you updated throughout the day whenever a verdict comes down. I'm Harold Fisher, and that's The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM, The Quiet Storm Channel, for this Monday, April 19th. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.